This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 22nd at 10:50 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like Ohio lawmakers will ignore the Ohio Supreme Court's order that they can hold an election in August, just like lawmakers have ignored a lot of other court orders over the decades.
Redistricting, school funding, redistricting, redistricting.
Lots of ignoring going on.
Yes, there was.
Let's talk politics. This is Snolly Goster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those politicians or Snolly Gosters out there who ignore the orders they want to ignore and then obey the others that they like. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the newest issue that truly divides Americans, transgender rights.
But first, that special August election, it is going to happen. The Ohio Supreme Court ruled along party lines to allow the vote on changing the Constitution to go forward.
Now, you know the story. Late last year, lawmakers passed a bill that made most August elections illegal, citing low turnout, the expense, and how those elections undermine democracy.
But then several conservative states passed abortion rights measures with about 55% of the vote, and abortion rights supporters began collecting signatures to put an amendment on the November ballot here in Ohio, guaranteeing those rights.
Looking at those other states and looking at the polls here in Ohio, abortion rights opponents rushed their own amendment to the August ballot, which would require a 60% majority.
But wait, like we just said, August elections we thought were mostly illegal, and the case landed before the Ohio Supreme Court, which ruled last week that the law that makes August elections illegal does not apply to the legislature because the Constitution gives them the power to set elections, and that provision trumps state law. So the Constitution trumps the wide-reaching election bill they passed last year.
Further evidence that these constitutions need a better editor or at least an occasional rewrite because they are not very well written at times. Anyway, but no surprise on that ruling. I think most people thought that the Republican majority would rule in favor of the Republican legislature that wants this election in August, and that's what happened.
We talked last week about how Pat Fisher could be the swing vote here. We were not exactly sure what he would do. He did end up voting with the majority, but did not join in on the majority opinion and did not issue an opinion of his own. Speculation that he was at least not firm in his conviction. Might have been a little annoyed at how the process worked out.
Yeah, I asked some Supreme Court watchers how unusual this is. They agreed that it was unusual, not unheard of. And sometimes justices may not like the way things are written. That's why they don't join it. Who knows?
Yeah, this issue is getting a lot of attention. NPR did something on it last week. Then CBS did a quite lengthy piece on their morning news about this, about they interviewed Frank LaRose, who said many of the same things that he said on our program 2 weeks ago, that he thinks this is good policy. He thinks that it makes sense for us to, you know, as he says, protect the Constitution. Also, a lot of, you know, a lot of money getting into this. The CBS story talked a lot about Richard Uihlein, about the, you know, he's the Republican billionaire mega donor from either from Illinois or Wisconsin, how you want to look at it. But he's given a majority of the money that's being used by a PAC to support this.
Yeah, and that was to get this onto the ballot to begin with. And you assume the money would come now that it is on the ballot. Maureen O'Connor was featured in CBS story. So you wonder if she's going to become a leading spokesperson against this August vote, against this change in the Constitution. You know, the messaging will be interesting to watch. This election is because of the abortion issue. I don't think it would be on the ballot in August. It wouldn't be 60% if not for the chances that this abortion amendment is on the November ballot. But there's a question of how prominent the abortion issue will be in this summertime campaign. I know supporters of the 60% vote are basically saying this is to protect the Constitution from the radical left and from special interests. That's going to be their message. I don't think they're going to be saying abortion out loud. Certainly, they will be in churches and grassroots organizations that are very much opposed to abortion rights.
Yeah, like Frank LaRose said, this is 100% about abortion when he was speaking to a Seneca County group of conservatives, a Lincoln Day dinner. And then he comes on our podcast 10 days later and does not mention the word abortion. I had to press him on it. And he says, yes, I am pro-life, but this is more about protecting the Constitution. And yeah, he said the quiet part out loud when he was in Seneca County. And I did ask him, why can't you just campaign on abortion? I mean, why can't you just say this is meant to preemptively stop abortion? And that is because a small but decisive majority of Ohioans favor abortion rights.
It's 55% to 57% in almost every poll.
Yeah. It's not a massive majority, but it's a clear majority who think abortion should be legal with restrictions.
But on the other side, the folks who are opposed to this 60% majority, the folks who support abortion rights and will support the amendment if it gets on the ballot in November, they have to be careful as well, because their messaging is this is taking away your vote. One person, one vote is the name of their campaign. And if they make it all about abortion, I think they run the risk of galvanizing anti-abortion rights activists to turn out in this August election. So it will be interesting to watch the messaging, out loud messaging. The private messaging will certainly be about abortion. But publicly, what will they be saying?
And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with turnout, because as we mentioned, August elections were eliminated, most of them, because of the high cost, about $20 million per election, and also the exceptionally low turnout that they tend to have. Last August's delayed state legislative primary, which we covered extensively, it was delayed because of issues over redistricting.
Yep.
We covered this ad nauseum last spring and last summer. Still had a turnout of 8%.
Yeah. They don't vote normally in August.
People are on vacation. Their teachers are getting their curriculum ready for the following school year. It's not a time when people are thinking about elections.
And that was a legislative race. So it was all state senators, not all state senators, but many state senators and state house reps. And some of those races were not contested. If the race is not contested, if the primary is not contested, the supporters of the candidates don't go out in as high in numbers. If you look back to 2009, the city of Columbus voted in August to raise its income tax. That was a big deal. With lots of coverage, lots of debates. There were a lot of people in the city of Columbus took stands on this. The unions came out in favor of it. They were anti-tax folks. They came out opposed it. The turnout in that election in the city of Columbus was only 18%. And that was an election that got a lot of attention. It was a 25% increase in the income tax in the city of Columbus. And that only got 18%. That's why the legislature did away with August elections, because that's exactly what Mayor Coleman at the time did. He put it on the ballot in August but the new turnout was low. They could get the police and fire union folks to come out, get their relatives to come out, and get it passed during a recession. He passed a 25% tax increase during a recession because he held it in August. I think 18% is probably a number to watch for this election.
We're talking a lot about how the Supreme Court allowed this election to go forward. We have not mentioned yet that they did force the Ohio Ballot Board to rewrite the language. It was relatively minor in the grand scheme of things, certainly a lesser story than them allowing the election to go forward. But they did make them fix what ultimately was an error.
Yes, it was a mistake.
It was a mistake. It was a typo, however you want to say it. They misrepresented the number of signatures that were required. I don't really see that affecting the election, but it was a bit of a victory for opponents of the 60% plan.
But it gets better, though, Steve. So after the Supreme Court ordered them to fix the mistake, the ballot board fixed the language. Secretary of State sent out an email with the language, and guess what?
Had the old language in it?
Nope, there was a mistake. There was another mistake.
I didn't even see
that email.
Happened?
Yeah, they sent it out to the ballot folks around the state, the election boards around the state. It was a minor little mistake. It was in the wording. Instead of saying shall, it should have been will. Important. That's an important legal distinction. But they had to quickly correct it and tell the boards of election, well, don't ignore that previous email. We made another mistake. This is the one you should use. So hopefully that's settled now. Ballots are being printed, because early voting starts next week, I think, for military folks.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a wild summer, I think. A lot of money coming in. You're going to start seeing the ads. It's going to be a wild summer.
There will be an update on that probably. Anyway, we'll be right back.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.
Welcome back to Snolly Goster from WOSU Public Media. The Ohio House this week approved two bills targeting gender identity. One would preclude trans girls and women from playing on girls and women's college and sports teams in Ohio, and would also ban gender-affirming care for minors.
The other would force teachers to out transgender students to their parents. The so-called Parents' Bill of Rights makes teachers tell parents if a student identifies with a gender other than the one assigned at birth. Republican Representative Gary Click is the sponsor.
Many people try to make this into an argument over the culture wars. That's not what it's about. This bill is about medical ethics.
But Democrats disagree. Democrats like Representative Juanita Brent say this is a solution in search of a problem, and she says it could do harm to kids who are already considered at risk.
Laws that we are put into place would leave a lot of young people unsafe. So unless we want to do a twofer and make sure that we also have the foster care system to go along with it, make it make sense.
You know, Gary Click says this is not about the culture wars. I think it is about the culture wars. I think this is not evidence-based. It certainly does not jive with anything that the largest medical associations say on this topic. It's a cultural thing. It's meant to scare people against transgender people.
Yeah, it's an issue that Republicans are targeting as a way to you know, galvanize their base. It's the social issue of the day, basically, for politicians this time. But if you look at the polling, you can see why it resonates. There was a new poll out this week that indicates that this issue doesn't clearly fall along party lines. It's a poll done by NPR, PBS, and Marist. It shows what we all suspected, that 88% of Republicans believe gender identity is determined at birth.
But the rest of the country is divided. Overall, 61% of Americans believe gender identity is determined at birth. That includes 62% of independents and 37% of Democrats, more than a third of Democrats.
Yeah. To me, the 61% of Americans believe that gender identity is determined at birth was a little surprising. If you hear a lot of the news coverage on NPR and on some of the cable networks, you would think that most Americans believe that gender identity can be determined later in life. This poll clearly shows that most Americans do not believe that right now. And 37% of Democrats believe gender identity is determined at birth. That's a surprising high number.
That's the surprise to me. I'm not surprised by 62% of independents. You know, we often talk about the view from Richwood, where mm-hmm. I live. This is a cultural issue that resonates with rural people especially. I would venture to guess that 90% of my neighbors think, in line with that 62% of independents, that gender identity is determined at birth. A lot of people who don't study this or don't look at this a lot don't really understand the science. They don't understand how doctors feel about this. They mm-hmm. just think, oh, of course your gender identity is determined at birth. I think it's not a deep issue for them. It's very obvious and very super. It's very surface level for them. It's obvious.
One of the things that stuck out for me is that they asked if you didn't know, and the highest level of uncertainty was among Republicans. 10% of Republicans say they were not sure when gender identity is determined. That, to me, is a fairly large number, and I think it's a lot like the early days of the gay rights movement, when people said, no, you're straight or you're gay, and if you're not, that's not normal. But as more people became familiar with sexuality and sexual orientation, the prospects of gay marriage and gay rights gained more favorability. It perhaps, as more people gain an understanding of what it means to be transgender or non-binary, that these numbers may change over the next 10 to 20 years, like the numbers for gay rights and gay marriage changed.
One of the more interesting things about this as well is that Republican messaging is working. The numbers have gone the opposite direction that a lot of people might have thought in recent years, that there's a lot more opposition to this idea
among Republicans.
Among Republicans, yes, yeah. of gender identity being fluid. It's moved in the opposite direction of what you might think it is.
Among Republicans.
Among Republicans, that's right.
One other thing, if this Ohio bill became law, the one on gender-affirming care, it's likely going to end up in court, and a federal judge this week ruled that a similar law in Arkansas is unconstitutional.
Yeah, the judge struck down Arkansas's first-in-the-nation ban on gender-affirming care for children as unconstitutional on Tuesday. Again, the first ruling to overturn a gender-affirming care ban.
In his order, Judge Jay Moody ruled the ban violated the due process and equal protection rights of transgender youth and families. He also said the law violated the First Amendment rights of medical providers.
Yeah, we should note that Judge Jay Moody, appointed by President Obama, he also wrote, quote, rather than protecting children or safeguarding medical ethics, the evidence showed that the prohibited medical care improves the mental health and well-being of patients, and that by prohibiting it, the state undermined the interests it claims to be advancing, end quote. Pretty strong words there from a judge.
Yes, Democrat-appointed judge. Likely going to go to appeals court and likely will go all the way to the Supreme Court if these bans keep getting approved.
Moving on now to our Snollygoster of the Week segment. This is where we honor the shrewdest political move or politician of the week. And this week, it goes to U.S. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito.
Yes, ProPublica reported the justice in 2008 rode on a private jet to a resort in Alaska. The jet was owned by wealthy hedge fund manager and Republican donor Paul Singer.
In the years after the trip, Singer's businesses were part of the cases that came before the U.S. Supreme Court. And Mike, this is seeming a little familiar.
Yes.
It's almost like we heard this about another justice not long ago.
Clarence Thomas, in particular. Anyway, so Samuel Alito never reported the trip on his financial disclosure forms, and he did not recuse himself from the cases involving Singer.
Alito, in an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, wrote that he only talked with Singer a handful of times. He said no reasonable and unbiased person would doubt his ability to decide Singer's cases impartially. He said the seat on the plane would have been empty if he was not. I guess that makes it okay. And he said he legally did not need to disclose it because it was an expression of personal hospitality from an individual.
That's a lot of reasons, a lot of excuses there. Put a lot of thought into it.
Okay, so an expression of personal hospitality. That can still be very problematic.
So if I gave you 10 grand to buy a beach house, would that be an expression of personal hospitality?
If I gave the Columbus chief of police the keys to my cabin in Key West
for a month
to not look at the drug dealing I was doing, that would just be an expression of
that's quid pro quo. You can't do that. That's the difference.
Because it's defined.
You can say, come to my beach house, wink, wink, nod, nod, but as long as you don't expect something in return, then it crosses the line. The bottom line is, once again, the Supreme Court does not have a code of ethics,
right,
and does not seem to have a check and a balance on that third branch of government.
Not to copy Keith Olbermann too much here, but that is my thoughts on the explanation by Samuel Alito there. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and please just tell your friends about us. That does help get the word out. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.